Welcome to Cybersecurity Insights, the podcast for the cybered.io learning community. Our goal is to bring cybersecurity practitioners the latest and most relevant education and training to upskill and dive deeper into topics that matter in today's modern cybersecurity world.
Good day, everyone. This is Steve King. I'm the managing director here at cybered.io, and today I have the pleasure of having Dan Grossu, our own CTO here at ISMG, on board with us for this podcast. Dan is a technology expert and very much one of the very best guys I've ever worked with in that regard, and he's also a nice guy. And we're going to talk about generative AI. Wow, guess what? And hopefully we're going to get into some of the risk factors that we see presenting themselves and some of the things maybe we haven't thought about. In addition to that, we want to see what we think about regulation in general, about both here in North America as well as globally, and what, if anything, the current administration's executive order yesterday means to our whole commercial landscape around generative AI. So, Dan, welcome.
Well, thank you, Steve. Good to be here once again, and happy to dive right into these topics. I was just looking here, and I see that the White House has gracefully released a fact sheet with regards to President Biden's executive order there. And well drafted, I must say. Maybe they have been using some ChatGPT to get to the final rendition, although that may not be the case. However, I think in my mind, a worthwhile effort, and I was discussing this with some other folks in the industry, and I think the consensus is that it's a good step forward. However, I think this is just as the fact sheet here blatantly states, an executive order. And I think with regards to the executive order, it's all fine and good. However, I think the challenging piece that's going to come about right now, and I'm quite interested to see what is going to happen next here, is there's a lack of strategy around how to even go about doing the things that have been ordered here. And to go even deeper on this, I think the concern, from what I hear, and I somewhat subscribe to this concern, is the fact that none of these concerns or none of these items that are, I mean, not none, but many of these items, you know, that are mentioned in this executive order have been top of mind when these technologies have been created. And the question is, how are these things going to change? What's the strategy to cover this this delta? But to begin with, you know, are we going to start from scratch and retrain large language models with these constraints in mind and these directives in mind? I think that's a non-starter given the cost and complexity of doing that. And now that the black box is out there and it's out in pretty much everyone's hands, what do we do? And I think this is what I'm quite interested in finding out and wanted to hear your take on it. Is this, where do you think the strategy is one going to come out from? And what do you think that strategy is even going to look like?
Yeah, it is. It's virtually impossible to develop a strategy, even for North America or for the United States, to deal with the issues that have been identified as as issues of concern in the executive order itself, let alone all of the other issues that haven't been addressed, which are plentiful. Because, as you know better than most, Dan, every one of I can do a workaround for every one of those things. And what happens when we saw Mark Zuckerberg, running around Congress for years now, begging for increased regulation. Yeah, it wasn't because he cared about, doing no wrong. It was because he was erecting a much higher wall for competition. When you're a startup, obviously you got 15, 20, 30, 150, whatever it is, million dollars, to start a company. The last thing you want to do is be spending that money on complying with regulations and going through that whole process, which takes forever because, we've got whatever it is, 74 agencies and 500,000 people and all of them doing each other's work. And, it's a hierarchy that's just crazy. And so it's no surprise that, the folks at, OpenAI would be very regulation positive about all this stuff. But when you think about it, you want to implement standards for red team testing prior to the public launch of an AI system. Who's going to do that? Is that a nice, nice thing? And how long is that going to take? And does that mean that you can't publicly launch an AI system? There's two parts to my question. You can't publicly launch an AI system unless you provide evidence that you've done like what OpenAI's already done with their red teaming network and Anthropic's already done with their voluntary safety commitments, that that you've been doing this stuff. If you're a startup or an early stage company and you're out thinking that your only problem is how to get to the market, all of a sudden this big wall from the federal government comes dropping in front of you and saying, hey, you don't get to do that until you can prove that you're, quote, safe, quote, whatever that means. And by the way, we can't do that testing until we have a standard. Give me a break. How long is that going to take? And the second part of that question is, while we're busily doing that stuff, are the Chinese doing something similar? Are the Russians doing something similar? Are the Iranians and the North Koreans doing something similar to make sure that they're doing no harm? I don't think so. So we put handcuffs on ourselves. We put a huge iron wall in front of us. We smother innovation here. And we have zero impact on the rest of the world because this is not a global government approach. This is the United States government doing what I think is a symbolic gesture to make sure that the world knows that we're really serious about this. So that's my view. And I'm happy to discuss that.
Yeah, lots to ponder on here, Steve. And as the proverb or aphorism goes, the road to hell is paved with good intentions. I don't want to sound like a doomsday person each year. However, I may tend to gravitate towards that extreme at some points in this conversation. And then you have mentioned NIST and the fine folks there. I think we kind of passed that stage a good while back when this cat got out of the bag, and there were no guidelines, no guardrails, no evaluation of these types of technologies, no good direction. as to where this is going. And I think what many folks forget specifically with the major players that we have in the market today is that many of them, and this is OpenAI, and specifically since they're front of the game here, as it were, they don't share anything with the public in terms of how they're doing what they're doing, right? So it is by all means pretty much a black box that that we're dealing with here, and I think this is where open source discussion comes in. While there are a few other models out there that are somewhat more open, right? I think it'd be very hard for somebody to go back right now and say, okay, let's look at what has been done here. Is it correct? Is it not? Right? And I think what scares me again here is the fact that we are moving very, very fast in this realm here. And again, the good intentions of this this order are good and great, but I think right now everybody's looking at the next person in the room, so to speak, as to, okay, what do we do with that? And on your note with regards to the other sort of geopolitical aspects of this particular situation, I'm confident that, you know, the Chinese government is not necessarily concerned about the same things, right? I mean, I think it's well known and well understood that surveillance in that part of the world is a thing. It's well understood that it's being put to work for purposes that in the Western world may not necessarily be agreeable with the majority of the population. And I think, you know, we're trying here to see how we can turn back time and do this right. And I think this particular predicament that we find ourselves in is going to be very much exploited by the rest of the adversaries of the Western world and Western countries. And it's not going to be exploited for good purposes.
Yeah, absolutely not. And I mean, the Chinese are already, you know, they've been doing, you know, social media credits for a long time using, you know, using facial recognition technology and assigning credit scores to individuals for, you know, and what they buy, how they spend their time, you know, the quality of their front porch, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So, yeah, Communist China is, you know, a model for exactly the opposite here. And they will continue to do what they do for the reasons that they do them. We're going to have no impact whatsoever. Nothing that we do here is going to have any impact on those folks. And you know, and the same, obviously, thing is true for Russia and Iran and the rest of them. So it feels, the other thing that is incomprehensible to me is that all of this EO stuff depends upon Congress to implement, because there's nothing here, as I read this document, there's nothing in this document that says, you know, effective tomorrow morning, everybody's got to close their rear door at 8 a.m. or, you know, whatever, right? It's nothing as simple as that, because it's not simple. It's cybersecurity, it's AI, it's all that. And so Congress now is charged with coming up with the answers to these questions, like standards for red team testing, standards for screening biological synthesis to make sure that, you know, we're not employing AI to create hazardous biological materials. I mean, come on. I've been named 25 countries that are killing themselves to employ AI to create hazardous biological materials because they're weapons of war, and the only weapons of war that they can afford. You know, and we've got 250, I think, venture-backed private companies in that biological material space that are AI enabled. This is going to make it much harder for those companies to continue scaling innovation if they develop standards for, if they have to screen, you know, every test, every new development, every process that they take step 12 and before step 13 on. But it'll have a zero impact on adversarial organizations. They just ignore the mandate, and, you know, it'll continue to tilt the playing field away from us as it always does. So you have to ask yourself, you know, who's teaming these people on? I mean, really, I know that's a bizarre question bordering on conspiracy theory. I'm not that person, but you do wonder, right? I mean, because it seemed to me, all of this seems so obvious to me that a 12-year-old could look at this and say, you know, there's something wrong here. You know, if these rules don't apply over here and here and here, and these are the people that are blowing the world up, but they only apply to us, and yet these rules, you know, lock us into all of these restrictions, but they let all these other countries do whatever they want, that seems wrong, you know? So in any event, Congress is the least equipped body of people that I'm aware of to study, learn, understand, comprehend, get to the point where they could actually make a proposal that might make sense around what you could regulate and what you couldn't regulate. But when you dive into that regulation world, in the most simplest kinds of ways, and I think copyright is one of those. And I know that one of the parts of the order is to formulate standards and best practices for, you know, identifying AI-generated content. Well, we have legal standards today that have to be aligned with whatever is going to come out of this, or vice versa, right? So I suspect that this whole section of this is going to be examined, determined to be impossible, and then written off and watered down. If I write a 80-word outline that you know frames a script for a movie about the mafia, and then I get Gen AI to expand it to 800 words and have it include the script itself, today the law says I can copyright that script. However, if I take an existing script and ask ChatGPT to rewrite it, the result can't be copyrighted. You know, and the distrust amid the legal profession, whom I know quite well, is so high that at the federal level, in order to file a court brief, lawyers fly from California to Washington, D.C. to file a paper brief because they do not trust our electronic system. So what does that tell you as a starting point for regulating generative AI in the field of law?
Yes, I think diving more into this, as I said, the executive order here touches on all the right key points: and safety, security, privacy, equity, civil rights, consumer protection, worker support, etc. Wanting America to lead this particular initiative. However, I think as you had pointed out, there are absolutely no actionable items here, and this is in the context where Congress will have to deal with this, and at the same time, most of these people may not even have a deep understanding of the implications and complexities around AI in general. So I think this is going to require a lot of education just to be able to have a meaningful conversation around these topics. And it's quite fascinating to see how fast these topics have broken out of being solely a subject of academia or industry insiders. And right now they're being the talk of the town, and everybody knows about these items. Just scary. And to add more to this, many industries right now, I think, feel the pressure to continue to adopt these technologies, and to some extent, they have great capabilities, especially when it comes to, you know, sort of soft topics, as you've mentioned, right? Writing, you know, content and generating things in textual format, so to speak. But then coupled with other items, I think it's going to be a madhouse. And I don't necessarily see where all of this is going to end up. And more to this, the burden being put right now on NIST as well to, and I quote here, set rigorous standards for extensive red team testing and ensure safety before public release, as you've mentioned. I don't know how they're going to be able to do that in the context of the larger AI problem, as it were. So maybe they're going to be able to regulate some of the aspects of large language models, but, you know, this is only a fraction of machine learning. This is only a fraction of the whole space. And how they will then apply these standards to all of the parties of concern, mystified by that. Even with technologies today, I think there's a mismatch in the expectations of what even AI can do and provide to us. And I think I've seen this in this particular executive order. I think it's almost the same sort of take as many uninformed folks would have when they start using these tools, because it's been my experience that many users of these tools are trying to use these tools as if this were an oracle, and they would just know everything and be able to answer any question. But in fact, they cannot really answer questions if data to support these questions is not previously fed to them. And the parallel that I'm making here is that it's great, you know, to have this executive order. It's great to have all of these good intentions, but we're asking them to be solved without having any data, without having any precedent, without having even the means or the transparency of doing research around these items in again, a productive manner. And yeah, it's going to be a runaround. That's the most polite way I can put it, I think.
Yeah, well, that's very polite. And my reading of this whole thing is reminiscent of the Steve Jobs adage, you know, everybody wants to get to heaven, but nobody wants to take that ride, you know. And I mean, it's all well and good, all this happy. It's all, you know, we used to call happy horse pucky. You know, it's all happy words, and because there's no way to get from here to there, to your, to the point you just made. There is just no way to do it. So I expect nothing to come out of this except a lot of, you know, new positions in DHS, more of our tax money being spent for, you know, whatever, organizational, whatever. And I'm sure there are people on the sidelines that are going to make lots of money in consultancy and all the rest of it. But a broader question is, today, in your estimation, Dan, what do you think the biggest risk to the actual use, the use that we're doing right now, not, you know, things we think about doing or things that we've done in the past, but the things that corporations are doing right now, what is the biggest risk that poses to us from a cybersecurity point of view?
Well, I think I've alluded to some of these, but happy to sort of go a bit deeper on the finer points here. A couple of things come to mind to begin with, and number one is thorough understanding of what these technologies are, in fact, right? So if we're considering these large language models, right, they think many a times, like I said, people have the wrong expectations as to what, you know, they can put in and what they can get out. If the expectations are in line with the capabilities, then I think we're fine, right? But I think these have been presented in such manner, these technologies, that is, have been presented in such manner where we've glossed over all of the shortcomings, we've glossed over all of the issues, and we had said, here, industry XYZ, take this and apply the snake oil to any of your problems. It will most likely get you further. And I think, in my mind, that's sort of the biggest challenge and biggest threat, is not understanding the capabilities of these technologies. And I would even dive deeper here and say that, you know, people have to understand that these models are just generating the next piece of text, the next token, and doing it in a smart way. But they cannot really predict the future. They cannot really reason. They cannot really argue, etc. While it may very much seem so from the presentation, that is certainly not the case, right? And you know, this is where, you know, we fail. And again, this speaking to the risk, that we fail to even identify some of the features of these technologies, where we say the model is hallucinating. Well, it's not hallucinating. This is not a bug, it's a feature. It was meant to generate more and more and more and more text. So we don't even understand, and again, I say this from, you know, sort of summarizing conversations I've had with people in the industry, we don't even understand the fact that this is how this technology is supposed to work, right? Now, when we are taking not knowing about these particular technologies and adding the pressures of wanting to apply this to anything we do, and to use a development term here, we want to make it part of our stack here, for better or for worse, right? I think that particular engagement is going to be fraught with failure. And why? Because these particular technologies are not necessarily good regardless of what you want to do. If the large language model, for example, or if the technology was trained, was fine-tuned, we've tested out mitigation of its shortcomings, then yes, maybe there is a potential use case there. But without doing that, I think we incur more risk than we can gather benefit from. And it's very important for us to understand that, again, we have to be very, very careful in assessing what goes in and what comes out, whether we put it in and we understand how it's gotten there. And I've listened to many talks and read many papers on the topic, and I'm not sure how to attribute this or whom to attribute this to at the moment, but one researcher made a very good argument about biases. If you, for example, train a model to give you the best route between point A and point B, and then you get asked the same question by a lot of users, what is the best route from point A to point B, and you keep on giving the same response, that begs the question, is it still the best route from point A to point B now that you've theoretically sent a lot of people along the same route? And this example doesn't do justice to the, you know, problems or the risk of bias, right? And again, not understanding how these models actually work and how they are applied to the task at hand. Hope that makes sense.
Yeah, sure. Does it seem to you that, given what you know of people generally and people specifically in the corporate world, that if you left these decisions to their own devices, that they would make good decisions about what to do with ChatGPT, for example, and execute sound judgment about what use cases they're trying to get ChatGPT to help them with, or not? Let me give you one simple example. If you're a sales professional and you just sort of recently stumbled upon this technology, and I mean, you know, you've heard of it, you know, that it's helping other sales reps, you're not sure what, and you see that some of them are using it to, you know, give you templates for email, cold emails, and scripts for cold telephone calls and so forth. And you say, well, that kind of makes sense. I don't have to write my own. And then you go ahead and you start using it for that. Do you expect that individual that I've just described would first stop and think, you know, maybe what I ought to do is make sure that ChatGPT understands who I am, the person, the persona I'm trying to reach, the value proposition I'm trying to present, the qualifications for that prospect who may or may not be interested or qualified to purchase the value proposition I'm presenting, what my business is, what the nature of my company is, what my own quotas, goals, you know, OKRs, KPIs are, and instead just rush in and say, hey, I'm going to call this person who's responsible for, you know, manufacturing at XYZ company. Give me a 3-paragraph script for an email. So long question. The question was, do you believe that the average corporate user is capable of applying this technology in ways that would exhibit the kind of judgment you would hope that these people could apply here?
Short answer, no. And I think I ought to elaborate on that. The problem here is I'm an optimist, and I put great faith in the critical thinking and judgment of your regular enterprise user, so to speak. However, we don't have this user equipped with the tools and knowledge to make this decision. So this decision, in my mind, is not necessarily going to be a rational decision, but rather, and we see this time and time again right now from what's going on with, or ever since the release of these chat models, it's going to be an impulsive decision. It's going to be a trendy decision. It's going to be a decision that one will not necessarily spend much time on, because the peers have also not spent any time thinking about this. And I'll even step away here and zoom out, if you will, and try to see if I can answer this in the context of enterprises that are trying or interested in incorporating AI in general into their product offering, or even just internal capabilities. The question here is a large language model or this particular technology in general the wrong choice? And I think my answer to that is an LLM or this type of technology is certainly the wrong choice for any use case where we don't have the confidence that there is really data out there in the open that has made it into this model that would apply to the use case that the enterprise wants to use it for. So to summarize here is, if the questions or the tasks that you want to have this technology sort of fulfill for you, if they have the reference and it's out there in the open, and presuming we have some transparency, we find out that it's been part of the training of the particular model, I think, yeah, you have a good chance of getting a positive outcome and a good result. But without having that transparency and that certainty, I think it's left to being somewhat of a gimmick, somewhat of a let's kind of try and see. And even when we try and see and we get to the point of, well, let's now constructively measure the results, how do we gauge these? By what metrics do we gauge these results?
Yeah. So let me rephrase that a little. What I'm asking really is, do you think that most enterprise settings that people have been trained to understand how an LLM does what it does and what the value of training the LLM itself in the interaction with you as the query, whatever, the engineer or participant or whatever you want to call it, the person making the query, that value is or not?
I think there is value there.
Well, but do you think that corporations are actually doing that? Or are they saying, hey, yeah, like Ted Lieu at the U.S. Congress said, quote unquote, my staff are really smart. There's no real risk with ChatGPT. I just let them run with it.
Yeah, I think the latter is what's happening right now.
Yeah, yeah. And then
that would require a lot more research, a lot more metrics, and a lot more deep understanding of the technology, which the median right now, I would want to say, does not possess.
Right. And to me, that's one of the the major risks with letting this continue the way it's continuing. I still think the number, the percentage of companies that have a policy in place around proper use is 7-8% now, maybe. You know, 3 months ago it was 6%, but it ain't growing fast enough. You know what I mean? So I think we're just kind of letting it run, and hey, if somebody comes up with something cool, that's great. I know, you know, we're trying to hire people and get them into positions where they can be the, you know, the AI, whatever, you know, czar for the company. But there aren't very many people who are not technologists by nature or by trade who understand how LLMs work internally and how these algorithms are set up to be able to come up with a program, you know, to say, here's what accounting needs to do, here's what sales should do, here's what marketing should do, you know what I mean? So we're kind of in this weird technology marching across this landscape like hell's on, you know, hell bent for leather, and yet we don't have, like, nothing in place. There's no infrastructure in place to support what we're doing.
Yeah, I would certainly agree with that. And to sum it up here, as bad as it sounds, it seems like most of these enterprises, at least the examples I've seen so far, are taking the stance that the quote unquote let Jesus take the wheel and hope for the best.
That's like saying, let my 12-year-old take the wheel and hope for the best, you know, isn't it?
Yeah.
Probably not a good outcome.
The probabilities of that are slim. If I were a betting man, that's what I would say.
Yeah. Well, Dan, we've come to the end of our another perfectly good hour, year or so, and we beat parts of this to death, which is great. That's what my objective is, and it's always illuminating and refreshing to chat with you about this stuff, and I'm glad we're able to capture this for our audience as well. And I always get in trouble, you know, somewhere along the way here for telling what I consider to be the truth about where we are, but, you know, hey, I think the truth is important. So thank you again for being part of this, and I'll see you in a couple of weeks. We'll move on to episode 3, by the way, or to our audience. This is our second recording that Dan and I have sort of tried to mine the depths of the AI arroyo, and we'll continue to do that until we run out of material, which I suspect won't be for a long time.
Well, thank you. Thank you again, Steve. I think we can certainly say that we're going to watch this carefully and see how it develops. And I agree, lots more to talk about in the upcoming weeks, months, and so on. Thank you once again.
We sure are, and it's my pleasure. And thanks to our audience for spending the time today. I hope it was entertaining for you. Until next time, I'm your host, Steve King, signing off.
Thank you for joining us for another episode of Cybersecurity Insights. You can connect with us on LinkedIn or Facebook, or send us an email at social@cybered.io. For more information about the podcast, visit cybered.io/podcast. Until next week, stay safe and secure, and we'll see you on the next episode of Cybersecurity Insights.